The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll have the pleasure of reading to you from Our State magazine, and you know which state that is. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now, we return to the February 2023 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. We have been reading about the winners of the annual contest that they run for the best of our state in various categories. They call it the Made in North Carolina Awards. And we are up to the craft folks. Here's the winner of Craft in Bright Black Durham, or rather it's called Bright Black Durham. This Little Light, a triangle area family, mixes positive messages with scents of lilac, myrrh, tobacco, and other fragrances. Their handcrafted candles illuminate the music and culture of the African diaspora. This is written by M.E.N. Wright. In the sanctuary of almost every black church is a VIP section. It's not for the pastors, but for the mothers, church elders who don hats, jewelry, and perfume on Sunday mornings, leading by example in worship services. These women and the voices that surround them are part of the inspiration behind Gospel, one of a series of music-themed candles made by Durham's Bright Black Candle Company. When its wooden wick is lit, Gospel releases a combination of evocative fragrances. Myrrh, used for centuries in spiritual ceremonies, calls up biblical references. Chamomile induces comfort and soothes the soul. And lilac, a purple spring flower, symbolizes hope and rebirth. We created the gospel candle because of the pivotal role that black spiritual music played in liberation, says Tiffany Griffin, who owns Bright Black with her husband Daniel Heron. People say it reminds them of church mothers, that soft scent, but modernized. Bright Black's handicraft candles are designed to shed light on some of the people, places, and events in history that spark ruminations on black greatness. Made with natural ingredients, each candle is intentionally named. Rock, for the musical genre invented by black artists, is a raw blend of sassafras and Palo Santo. Durham, for the city's deep history, including its prosperous Black Wall Street, has scent notes of cotton, tobacco, and whiskey. And Signature's earthy citrus aroma reflects the passions and personalities of the family that created Bright Black, Griffin Heron and their 5-year-old daughter, Elena. They even named one of the plants in their studio and showroom Royal 7 in honor of the state's first sit-in. Not the famous 1960 demonstration in Greensboro, but the one that took place 3 years earlier at Royal Ice Cream in Durham. It's the little things that aren't little, Griffin says, of the details surrounding those names. We're hoping to have all kinds of conversations embedded around the space. Indeed, everywhere you look inside the shop, which is tucked into a strip mall between a thrift store and a Food Lion, are reminders of a powerful black past, present, and potential future. Classic titles by Toni Morrison, James Baldwin, and Malcolm Gladwell line the windows. A group of snake plants with name cards put Claudette Colvin, the teenager who refused to give up her bus seat 9 months before Rosa Parks' well-known protest, in the company of civil rights giants Marcus Garvey and Martin Luther King Jr. And on the walls, paintings from Charlotte artist Zaire McPherson's For Colored Girls series shares space with the Afrofuturistic landscapes of Durham artist Tevin Neely. It's a family affair this Sunday morning. As Griffin checks inventory at the front of the store, Heron works production at the back. And Alina, bubbling with enthusiasm about her recent birthday, oversees everything else. The couple co-founded Bright Black in 2019. The name came to Griffin in a dream as a way to counter the harmful narratives that their daughter might face growing up. Black, which often has a negative or dirty connotation, is paired with bright to evoke the beauty, brilliance, and intelligence that is the lived black experience, Griffin says. The company has already built a dedicated following. Bright Black won this year's Made in North Carolina Award in the craft category, and with celebrity fans like Beyoncé and a partnership with the NBA, Griffin and Heron have had to double their staff to keep up with orders. They knew that the company had reached a milestone 2 years ago with the arrival of a 2 a.m. email that made them scream. It was from the office of Michelle Obama. Her stylist was reaching out about candles for the former First Lady's organization, When We All Vote. Griffin attributes the candles' popularity to the quality of the care that she and Heron put into them, as well as the company's ethos of helping build the world that they want to see through the power of storytelling. Bright Black also partners with organizations that push for environmental equity, juvenile justice, and land rights, donating proceeds to those causes. There's a lot of mental load for people trying to figure out how to do right, Griffin says. We make it easy. Storytelling was always what motivated Griffin, even before she went down the entrepreneurial path. As a teen, she aspired to be a filmmaker of documentaries that reflected the complexities of urban life in places like her hometown of Springfield, Massachusetts. In the 90s, drugs and gangs devastated that landscape. A constant in Griffin's life was her grandmother, Nana, who stepped in as a surrogate parent more than once. Griffin associates Nana with the aroma of baked goods. She was the original scent artist, layering different smells, Griffin says. She even wore perfume to bed. Known around town as the cake lady, Nana never measured her ingredients, and Griffin never had a chance to ask about them before her grandmother died. Pistachio cherry cake was Nana's specialty. If I think about my childhood, there are some unpleasant things, but the smell of Nana's cake, whenever she was baking one at the time, she trails off and smiles. Oh, wow. Her grandmother's sent cakes in the mail during Griffin's undergraduate years at Boston College, where she met Heron, who also became enamored with Nana's skills. How are the cakes so moist, he wanted to know. After completing her graduate studies, Griffin and Heron remained friends but didn't date until years later when a Facebook flirtation kindled a romantic interest. When they began seeing each other, they'd burn candles and talk about how they could make their own. Their first Christmas together, the couple gifted handmade candles to family members. They were horrible, Griffin says, laughing. All synthetic dyes and low-quality wax. But their families encouraged the couple to keep up the hobby and maybe even sell the candles. One of their earliest ideas was to make one based on hip-hop love songs. These days, a different version of that candle, called hip-hop, is part of Bright Black's music-themed collection. People think hip-hop is about gangsters, and it gets this bad rap, Griffin says. But if you analyze hip-hop, it's very complex poetry with intense themes and great musicality. So we thought, let's capture that with these candles. That's really the seed. The seed that started a hobby that led to a business involving beautiful, fragrant candles that tell powerful stories. Bright Black is on Chapel Hill Road, number 24, in it's on 2020 Chapel Hill Road, number 24, in Durham. And they have a website, of course, brightblackcandles.com. And now, craft honorable mentions. The first is Simply Entwined in Arden, tartan reed woven basket. When Buncombe County artist Pat Holbrook took her first basket weaving class, she didn't expect to fall in love with one of North Carolina's oldest and most treasured art forms. "I remember thinking to myself, I'll never be able to do this," she says. "But by the end of the class, I was so excited that I could actually create a small basket, and I've been making baskets ever since." Around 2005, Holbrook decided to start her own business. She knew that she wanted to use her craft to showcase things she loved and memories she cherished, like an equestrian-themed basket inspired by her time riding horses as a child. Holbrook takes pride in crafting her own designs, including baskets accented with leather or braided handles, but she also enjoys modifying intricate patterns by other artists. To make her tartan reed basket, based on a pattern by designer Nancy Jones, Holbrook used wood for the base and tan and green rattan reeds for the basket. At first glance, people think the reeds are woven in different squares, she says, but it's really just a fun optical illusion. Holbrook's baskets can be found at the Cradle of Forestry gift shop in the Pisgah National Forest and the Northwest Trading Post in Glendale Springs. Next is Mark Hewitt Pottery, another runner-up. They're in Pittsburgh, wood-fired pottery-lidded jar. Mark Hewitt grabs 5 pounds of wedged clay and centers it on the potter's wheel in his Pittsburgh home workshop. As the wheel spins, he shapes the clay into a 16-inch tall vessel with quiet confidence and precision. Tomorrow, he'll attach handles and make a lid. The shape is inspired by pots made during the 19th century in North Carolina, he says. The state's pottery tradition, as rich as the local clay, lured the England-born potter to the Piedmont in 1983. His father and grandfather were directors of a fine china manufacturing company in England, and Hewitt's childhood home was filled with pottery. After studying in England and becoming an apprentice for legendary ceramicist Michael Cardew in the late 70s, Hewitt brought his knowledge to Pittsburgh, where he blends Southern folk pottery traditions with contemporary style and function. For his wood-fired lidded jar, he uses 3 types of local clay and an alkaline glaze. His final touch involves pressing bluegrass on the lid and beneath the rim to create streaks when the vessel is fired, a tradition started by potters in the 19th century. The folk potters in our state were exceptionally creative craftspeople, he says. They created a world-class ceramics heritage that I feel honored to continue. Visit during kiln openings or by appointment at 424 Johnny Burke Road, HewittPottery.com. Now let's meet the judges for the craft section. Roy Underhill, the Woodwright School in Pittsburgh. While a classroom of students watches, Roy Underhill presses a mortising chisel against a piece of yellow pine that will become part of a window frame for the circa 1870 mill near Saxapaw that he calls home. With a wooden mallet, he taps the handle of the chisel, chipping out the wood bit by bit until he's created a rectangular tunnel all the way through. There are faster, easier, more modern ways to cut mortises, but Underhill prefers this classic method. Sorry, had to cough there. Now I lost my place. It's a connection with the natural world, he says. Our intelligence, our bodies, our whole civilization, our culture evolved from working with wood. And if you become disconnected from that, you're kind of lost. Underhill began woodworking in the 1950s as a young boy living in Washington, D.C., teaching himself from library books and scavenging wood from the floorboards of his attic for his projects. In the wood shop that he set up in the basement, he would play pretend, hosting a woodworking TV show for an imaginary audience. His childhood games would prove prophetic when decades later he became the host of The Woodwright's Shop, a how-to show on PBS through which he taught traditional methods for building with wood. Underhill studied theater at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, specializing in directing, but also continuing to work with his hands by building sets. He later earned a graduate degree in forestry at Duke University, focusing on historical woodworking. For his final graduate presentation, he gave a demonstration on using old tools. Afterward, an audience member suggested that something similar might work on television, so Underhill approached UNC-TV, now PBS North Carolina. In its second season, The Woodwright's Shop went national. It ran on PBS for 37 seasons. In 2008, Underhill opened the Woodwright School in Pittsburgh. Nowadays, passerbys on Hillsborough Street can stop, peer through the window, and watch as Underhill instructs students on topics like traditional window joinery. Another performance for another audience, and another chance to teach someone how to make something by hand. They're at 89 Hillsborough Street in Pittsburgh. Woodwright's School. Actually, it's Woodwright School. Just one S in there. .com. Meet some more judges, Chris Pence and Mark Warren. Hand Burlington. After Chris Pence and Mike Warren moved to a rustic cabin just outside of Durham's Duke Forest and started their pottery business, Hand, that's H-A-A-N-D, with very little money, the two mostly worked outside and were exposed to the elements year-round. Even inside the cabin, there was no air conditioning and only one wood stove. It taught us a lot about perseverance, Pence says, of living and working there, and it only strengthened our passion for what we were doing. Pence and Warren were friends in high school in Florida, and though they went to different colleges, they remained close. After graduate school, Pence, who discovered a love for pottery as a teen, completed a two-month concentration in clay at Penland School of Craft before starting a job in accounting. Warren followed, beginning a two-year core fellowship at Penland just after Pence left. There he studied slip casting, a process of making pottery with molds. When Pence quit his job, he and Warren began talking about slip casting. With his business and accounting background, Pence realized that the process was scalable, seeing as how you can train someone to slip cast much more easily than to wheel throw. Warren invited Pence, who was back in Florida at the time, to move into the cabin with him, and they got to work. It was physical labor, and nature posed challenges in the form of bug bites and bad weather. Because they worked under a persimmon tree, there was often the risk of the fruit falling and breaking a pot. But nature was also a benefit. The pair dried their molds in the sun and made porcelain pieces using rainwater. 10 years later, Pence and Warren have more than 25 full-time employees who produce 1,500 pieces a week. Hand sends products from the former hosiery mill in Burlington, where it now operates, to customers worldwide, including restaurants in the Triangle, the Triad, Asheville, and Wilmington. Warren, who designs the work, draws inspiration from the natural world and from historical pottery. Hahn's Cloudware collection features marbled blue and white pieces that look like Carolina sky. Though Pence and Warren are a long way from their humble beginnings, nature still plays a role in their creations. They're at 47 Tucker Street in Burlington, Hand.us. And now, the winner for style, Farm to Feet in Mount Airy. Best Foot Forward. The second-generation owner of a Surrey County hosiery mill is helping keep a North Carolina legacy industry alive. His company's 21st century socks feature bold designs and high-quality fabrics geared to dedicated lovers of the outdoors. Written by Eddie Huffman. As Gus Davis hiked with his family along the mountains to Sea Trail in Pisgah National Forest, He did what six-year-olds do, picked up pretty rocks and acorns that caught his eye. When he needed to sack to carry them in, he improvised with a sock. But it wasn't just any sock. It was a farm-to-feet sock made in North Carolina, a homegrown brand that Gus's mother swears by. They're socks. They're acorn carriers. They're all those things, says Jennifer Farr Davis, who's walked more of our state's ridges, balds, peaks, and valleys than just about anyone. In 2011, Davis hiked the Appalachian Trail in a record 46 days, and she wore farm-to-feet socks when she took on the 1,175-mile mountains-to-sea trail in 2017. I had a couple of pairs so I could change them out, she says, but the socks I had at the beginning, I still had at the end, and there were no holes in them whatsoever. Farm to Feet socks first hit stores in 2013. They're the brainchild of Kelly Nastor, CEO of Nestor Hosiery in Mount Airy, who envisioned a high-end house brand that would draw entirely from American suppliers and serve as a model for sustainability. A decade later, Farm to Feet socks have proved hugely popular among outdoor enthusiasts like Davis, and they won this year's Made in North Carolina award in the style category. The success of the line has helped Nestor Hosiery expand its operations, bucking the decades-long trend of shuttered textile mills across the state. The door inside Nestor Hosiery opens to what sounds like a cloudburst. The first room here is our knitting room, Kelly says, as he leaves a quiet office area and enters a huge room with machines stretching in neat rows across the floor. Hearing protection is not required, he continues, raising his voice above the din. I always offer it, though, because some of the areas are a little loud. Kelly leads the way through the roar of American industry, a sound that has quieted in the past quarter century, but never stilled. His uncle Marty founded Nestor Hosiery in 1993, and Kelly and his team have started a new chapter in the story of one of North Carolina's oldest industries. The company's Farm to Feet line represents a 21st-century twist on textiles. These days, the mill's knitting machines are a computer-driven tangle of metal, cables, and flexible hoses, all capped with colorful spindle halos. Each machine works to turn strands of yarn into fancy hosiery. Workers carry tablet computers to monitor and tweak the process. The machine spit out a variety of socks, from stripes and solids and vibrant designs of trees, dogs, guitars, and logos for open-air destinations like the Appalachian Trail. Farm to Feet socks sell for about $15 to $30 a pair and line shelves at North Carolina retailers like Mass General Store and Great Outdoors Provision Company, as well as national stores like L.L. Bean. Nestor Hosiery has partnered with Jennifer Farr Davis to create a sock that includes a portion of the logo for the Blue Ridge Hiking Company, her guided adventure outfit. In an outdoor world often saturated with machismo, Blue Ridge Hiking's logo features the silhouette of a woman. When I got into hiking and backpacking, the traditional symbol for hiking was a guy with a pack and a stick, Davis says. Nestor came up with a sock design in which the hiker distinctly has a ponytail. It felt different and inclusive. Blue Ridge Hiking isn't Nestor's only partner. A new design slated for this fall, the one that won a Made in North Carolina award, features the logos of both Farm to Feet and the Asheville-based Eagle's Nest Outfitters, ENO, along with images of ENO's signature product, a hammock. ENO is one of more than 80 companies that make up the nonprofit trade group Outdoor Gear Builders of Western North Carolina. Ann Rollins, ENO's marketing director, says that the workers at her company swear by Farm to Feet. On any particular day, you can see their iconic cuffs on most of our employees, she says with a laugh. It's become an ongoing joke that when we flash our cuffs at each other. So when Farm to Feet reached out to do a collab sock, it was a no-brainer. The wool used in Farm to Feet socks originates in the Western North United States, where the landscape supports large sheep ranches. Wool is a natural fiber with qualities that make Farm to Feet socks ideal for the trail. They're really good about breathability and wicking moisture. So if your feet do get wet, they dry fast, Davis says. That helps so much with foot health and foot care on the trail. In its earlier years, Nestor Hosiery specialized in making regular ordinary socks for other companies. By the late 90s, the factory had expanded to make technical socks, a development that culminated into farm and feet, or rather farm to feet. Kelly came up with the idea in 2010 when he hired a photographer to document the company's manufacturing process for a marketing campaign. The idea jumped out of the images. We have to figure out a way to tell a story of this, create a brand. The first farm-to-feet sock hit the market 3 years later. As he winds his way through the 133,000-square-foot main facility of the plant, Kelly stops at a machine that grabs finished socks, folds them in half, and loops them through thick paper display sleeves ready to hang in stores. I think that out of all of our processes, this is the one that looks the most like a Dr. Seuss factory, he says with a smile. Nestor Hosiery has made socks in North Carolina for 27 years, and in this factory for almost 20 of them, preceded by other companies that operated out of the facility for decades. In the textile industry's heyday, the largest mills in Mount Airy employed thousands of workers. That was before the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, and other factors sent many of those jobs overseas. Nowadays, Nestor employs about 225 people at its specialty sock business, up from about 165 in 2019. Jason Hooker is one of four generations of his family to work in the factory, starting with his grandfather in the 1960s and continuing with his mother's aunts and uncles and son. Hooker started as a line mechanic in 2003 and worked his way up to become Nestor's quality and technical manager. I think there's something to be said when the biggest companies left and we're still here, Hooker says. Obviously, we're doing something right. That something is farm to feet. 10 years on, the line has become a homegrown success story on and off the trail. The company makes 120,000 pairs of socks a week, and the roar of its knitting room shows no sign of quieting down. Back in the office area, Kelly peels one of the socks off of a foot mannequin to demonstrate its seamless toe closure and detailed design. At the rate they're going, Nestor's 21st century socks will continue to serve hikers and acorn collectors on trails across North Carolina and beyond for decades to come. Their outlet store is on Carter Street in Mount Airy, nestorhosiery.com. The picture here of a close-up of one of the socks, it's brown at the below the ankle, out to the toe, and there's a little stitching that says farm to feet, and the letter O ends in an arrow which points toward the feet, which is kind of cute. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Have any questions or comments? Call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.